Educators want to stay fresh with literacy instruction, but are so busy with students, they don't always have the time. All year long, Choice Literacy publishes and delivers the best K-12 literacy practices so that educators can grow their students as readers and writers with choice in literacy. Welcome to the Big Fresh Choice Literacy Podcast. I'm Ruth Ayers. Be a Logophile by me, Ruth Ayers. When my son Sam was in first grade, he lost points on a math problem because he wrote the answer as 4 daffodils. He spelled daffodils with one F. The teacher added a big red F before the O and drew a thick red line through the whole word. Then she printed flowers after the correction because the word flowers was on the word wall. She added -2 in the margin of the paper. I was still new to navigating the waters of school as a parent, but I wondered why Sam lost points, because the math was executed perfectly and the sketched flowers on the math worksheet resembled daffodils. I was impressed that he knew to label the answer, as well as his ability to be specific about the flower shown. Sam has always loved words, and in preschool began telling people, "I am a logophile." That's a person who loves words. Even though he was a logophile, I was impressed that at 6 years old, he could almost spell daffodils conventionally. I asked him why it was wrong. He looked up at me with his blue eyes wide and innocent and said, "In school, you should only write words you know how to spell." I often wonder about the messages we send students. If kids write only words they know how to spell, how will they grow as writers? How will they learn to spell more complicated words? How will they revel in the joy of weird spellings and unpredictable patterns? How will more logophiles be nurtured? At the same time, I understand the need for conventional spelling. There is comfort in the conventions of print, and there is power in them. Like most things in life, it is a delicate balance. Today, Sam is in high school, and he is one of the most conventional spellers I know. He finds humor in the misspellings in our family text threads, and he is the go-to proofreader in the house. I trust him to catch spelling errors more than I trust myself. Somewhere along the way, the little logophile turned conventional speller. I think it had more to do with the fun and challenge of working with words than it did with red ink. This week, we look at word work and the way it brings joy and conventions to spelling. We offer a free article by Kathy Meir, where she shares tried and true strategies for word learning with struggling young learners. My article, "What Can You Learn from Slice of Life Writing?" is also free this week. It is a reflection on the things I learned from writing alongside a global community. Don't forget to follow along with the conclusion of March Book Madness, hosted by Tony Kiefer and Scott Jones. I hope that you'll join the Choice Literacy Book Club. Bitsy Parks selected the picture book, Little Brown, for our March read. You can join the conversation using the hashtag Choice Literacy Book Club. Our members will find a ton of new content about word work. Heather Fisher describes the process of integrating sight word work into the existing curriculum in her article, Fun with Sight Words. There's a great new video on the site from Haley Whitaker's kindergarten classroom. You'll see how her students spend their transition time learning sight words. And we share an encore video with Gail Boucher, who leads a short small group lesson on vocabulary. In the debrief following the lesson, Gail talks with Joan about vocabulary instruction and the importance of fostering independence in students when it comes to noticing and learning new words. Don't miss Bitsy Park's course, Gradual Release of the Classroom Library, where she takes you into her primary classroom for a close-up look at how she organizes and then gradually releases the library to students. Jin Schwanke reflects on the things she'll keep after a year of pandemic teaching in her article, COVID, What I'll Keep. Literacy coaches Kathy Meir and Kelly Honey talk about the value and challenges of demonstration lessons. Matt Renwick has a brand new course on the site called Literacy Walks, Seek, Name, and Strengthen Promising Practices. Mandy Robeck's article, Using Shared Writing to Nudge Students Towards Conventional Spelling, is the topic of our conversation this week on the podcast. Mandy joins us to tell us more about the things that she's thinking about when it comes to using word work to help her second graders become more conventional in their spelling. Mandy Robeck is joining us today on the podcast. Welcome, Mandy.
Thank you, Ruth, for having me today.
So you've been a longtime contributor to Choice Literacy. How did you start writing?
My friend Frankie Severson, I had written a project or a paper for a study group we were doing, and she said, you should submit that to Choice Literacy. I was like, really? I should submit my writing. She goes, yes, this is a good idea. I think it was a list of children's literature around teaching economics in third grade at the time. And so with Frankie's help, I submitted it, and I have fallen in love with Choice Literacy and writing for them and sharing my ideas.
Frankie's such a great encourager to everybody, just always helping us do more than what we thought we could do ourselves. So tell us a little bit more about you. You're teaching second grade this year.
Yeah. So I've always been a lifelong learner. It was interesting when I thought about this question, because I've actually been in school my whole life, except for a 1 year maternity leave with my third daughter. So I've been teaching for 28 years. I've taught in two different school districts, and my focus has always ended up, it's been primary. So I started teaching in a school that, had a progressive education philosophy, integrating the arts and things. And when I was in that district, I was able to teach multi-age grade levels. So I had a second and third grade and a first and second grade combination classrooms. And then my district, I've been in Olentangy Local Schools here for 20 years. And I've taught K, 1, 2, and 3. And about every 7 years, I seem to get an itch and I change things up to keep things fresh. But a really unique thing in my current district is we've taken a lot of farmland and expanded to be much more suburban. So I was able to open a brand new building. And so that's just something I think a little unusual in teaching, and it was super exciting, one of the highlights.
Well, I'm glad that you continue to teach and continue to share what's happening in your classroom with us at Choice Literacy. You have a new article out called Teaching Spellers with Shared Writing, and you open the article with this scene where you reached out to your coach, Nikki. You were wondering how to help kids move from their knowledge of letter sound correspondence to conventional spelling. And when I was reading the scene, I was just struck by the courage it took to reach out to an instructional coach. Now, I know coaching is not new to you, but I'm wondering if you have some advice to someone who might be apprehensive about working with a coach.
Yes, I do, because I love working with coaches. I think the first thing to think about is if you have a wondering. So if there's an instructional practice you want to know more about, or fine-tune your own practice, or if there's a student that you just want a second feedback on. I think teaching can sometimes be lonely and isolation, because you're the only adult sometimes in a classroom with students, and that I like to think of a coach as a thinking partner, someone to bounce ideas off with. I also love having someone in my room. Think of it as someone who gets to know your kids and just that community, so that when you bring up a student, they're like, oh yeah, I can see that student saying that idea, or, you know, funny little anecdotes, stories, they get to understand a little bit more. And then I know it's really hard to think of having someone in the room, but I think that a coach's goal is always to meet you where you are. And if you think about it as differentiating your instruction with your own students in the room, that's what a coach really wants to do. They just want to help you where you are and help you move forward or figure something out.
It is exciting when you reach that point where you've got somebody else in the room and, you know, they can laugh at the same things you're laughing at, and they notice kids, and you're able just to bounce some ideas off with them. In your article, so you share with Nikki what you're wondering and how you're curious about the spelling in second grade. And she had offered you some options, and the shared writing, like in your article, as I was reading it, I was smiling because I could just hear you. You were like, yes, that's it. I want to try that, because you had talked about how you use shared writing often in kindergarten, but not so much in second grade. So how does shared writing support the move from letter sound correspondence to conventional spelling?
Yeah, this was a great question to ponder and think through together. I think the first step, the biggest instructional move, the way we go from sounds to spelling, is because we're co-constructing the text, the language that we use. So often when those early emergent writers are getting ready to go, the students, they have these ideas, and it's just like a waterfall, right? It's exciting, and the ideas are just flowing. And so they just have to get it down on paper. Or sometimes waterfalls dry up depending on the season of the year. And sometimes students get stuck on those ideas, and then the idea is still just the main focus to put down. But with this co-constructing the text and the language, that we can focus on the message, supporting that end of the ideas, that then we can focus more on the spelling and conventions, and they don't get lost as we're writing together, right? You're supporting the writers to lift the whole package up. I also think that by co-constructing the language, we just kind of slow down the thinking process. It was like when Nikki and I were working together, it was almost like I felt like we went into slow motion sometimes, because sometimes we focus just on one sentence, the structure of the sentence, and we were being very articulate because it was about mapping. And so we had certain vocabulary words we wanted to include, and we just had a lot of intentional talk around that and around word features. So sometimes we were just focused in on one word, trying to get those sounds together.
It is nice to take that time and just really give kids space to figure it out, but also be able to study them and see what they're doing and what they need. And so in the article, you're sharing some of the resources, and one of them is a flexible word wall. Will you tell us more about it?
Yeah, so the flexible word wall, like if you can envision it, it's a traditional setup of what we would say a word wall would be: letter cards for each letter of the alphabet. And then when I started teaching, I used to do same five words for everybody in the classroom, right? And we had a set of sight words we would work through, and we'd have them up on the wall. And when it got crowded, we might take some down, but it was the same words for all. But recently, I don't know, not recently, I always felt a little unsettled about it, but realizing there's a range of spellers and capabilities. And, you know, some kids are easy, you know, capable spellers right away. It just works for them, and other kids need. So what words they don't know and do know is not the same for everybody. So I had a concern about using the same word wall words for that. So I go through their independent writing, and I look for misspelled words to add to the word wall, and just really trying. Second graders are ready to start using resources more than kindergarten and first graders necessarily sometimes. So cueing them that's a resource to use in your own writing when they're drafting their work. So then we pull from that, but students can also add to the word wall. The other day, a student, the word people wasn't up there, and he he asked me, can we add people to the word wall? And I said, of course. So I just grabbed a post-it note. And then I was like, I wonder if they make white post-it notes. I get a, you know, like things to match or whatever. And I have a yellow post-it note up there right now, probably small details, but I thought, why can't this all be on post-it notes if it's flexible? So sometimes, you know, they're up there for 4 to 6 weeks. And then I can refer to that during shared writing or interactive writing. And then we might do a small check-in just to see how many people can spell 10 of them at a time. And can we pull them away and put them back up?
It's so great when kids are asking if you can add something to the word wall, because you know then that they're using it and they looked at it for the resource and it wasn't there. And so they definitely have in mind, hey, we can add it and it can become even more useful to me. Mandy, one of the things I really like about your writing and your approach with kids is the way that you are constantly curious. You know, we think about being a lifelong learner, and it is evident that you are learning and growing as a teacher alongside your students. And so one of the things that I'm curious to hear you talk a little bit more about is, how are you helping students move to more independence as conventional spellers?
I think giving them the tools and the structures, and a lot of times it's cheering them on, right? You can do this. it's been, you know, in the current situation of teaching, whether you're hybrid or all virtual. And one of the things we've been is just rebuilding that self-confidence that you can do this, you can take the ownership for it. So one of the things for independence is they each have 5 individual words that they're working on for the week. So that is individualize, and hopefully it motivates them, and sometimes I let them add a word in there that they might want to add to those 5 words to work on. I also work on finding out their different spelling stages of spelling. So some kids need to work on digraphs in second grade, and some are working on long vowel teams, and some are working on suffixes. So I'll do some small group feature work to meet their needs, and then writing conferences. It's just that one-on-one, you get to slow them down. You get to see maybe what words, multisyllabic words. I love just showing them to slow the process down and give them feedback. And this is how you wrote it. And then let's write it again and compare the differences during that time. And it's so cute when they see the little light bulb go on where they're like, oh yeah, I knew that. I knew ING was ING. Or WH, and they had to, you know, put the H in there for their digraph. One of the things Nikki helped me with and had introduced me to that I mentioned in the article is the practice page, which I had never tried that before. And there's not too many times, even in my own writing, where I sit down and get out a different sheet of paper and say, oh, let me try that. Or everything's typing and you can just erase and bring it back. But the kids really enjoyed, and I thought that felt that was empowering them. Like, oh, let's try it on your practice page first, and then we can put it into our booklet within our writing. And sometimes I've seen them pull that out during independent writing time, a practice page, and try to make some sound boxes on their own. We also have personal dictionaries so that they have a resource right at their seat. And if they put their family names in there or vacation spots, making it fun, I think helps them to see that. I think sometimes spelling gets a bad rap in the whole literacy, different parts of literacy, and that. So something I took from my friend, another contributor, Mary Lee Hahn, is Word Game Wednesday. And so for word study, I bought some different board games like or Buzzword Junior, Don't Say It, Rhyme Out was another fun one. And the kids really, they just had so much fun playing games. And then sometimes we don't realize that we're working on spelling.
It's so true. And what you said about spelling getting a bad rap, I think it does happen sometimes in classrooms. And that's why your article is refreshing. And when you mentioned Mary Lee's article, I remember reading that when it had first come out. And what a great idea it is just to add some, you know, life and fun into some conventional spelling. Shared writing is not a new technique. it's something that's been around for a while. And what I've noticed is during this year of COVID precautions, we can kind of all, I think we're all feeling a little bit like we're first year teachers. Yet I've noticed that you keep returning to some tried and true practices. What is it about shared writing that makes it worth holding on to?
First, I had to answer this question. And then when I sat with it today during my lunchtime, I was like, this is why. I'm so glad you asked this question. I think shared writing, the co-constructing of the language used in the message builds, is a tool to help build your community, right? You're bringing different ideas and they're coming together. And at the end of the chart, at the end of the writing time, everyone can look at that and say, those are our ideas. This is us. Because different people are sharing, but it's not just one person's statement. You kind of navigate what we want to add or tweak the words around. And I also think the other reason it's worth holding on to is that it's authentic, that the language and the thinking of the students is right there in that moment. And you're not going to get that moment back. So it's just a little snapshot or memory. It's like just capturing exactly what was happening.
Well, sometimes the reason why the tried and true practices are because they just make so much sense. And I'm glad you talked through those things about co-constructing with kids and the way it's building a community and helping, you know, the way that we're creating something together that we couldn't have done on our own is powerful for kids. What last bit of advice do you have for offering children more choice and voice as writers?
One of the things, I was very fortunate in my undergraduate studies, that's when Donald Graves' first book came out, and Writing Workshop was all the buzz. And that was my graduate school text. And, you know, there's things that I think when you're learning for the first time, you just hold on to because they just stick in your heart. And one of the things that has stuck with me all these years is that the independent writing topics for kids, that during independent writing, kids are picking their own topics and their own choice. And we can support that through modeling, like idea gathering, you know, lists, things I could write about. Or I just recently launched writer's notebooks with my second graders. And you can always go back to one of those ideas that we've been using and turn it into a writing piece. And I think that can also make people nervous about not having the writing structured, or maybe there might not be some standards in there, but the standards are still going to appear through your mini lessons. You can still instruct that, but the topic and that choice can always be there because that's going to be their motivation. And that's how they're going to feel more empowered as a writer. But I think we can use the shared writing and the interactive writing for maybe some of that topic, or like we did in this geography project, we were able to make sure we used some vocabulary in different things from content that we wanted to make sure they could include in a structure. Like we worked a lot on different openings for each of the pages. We didn't want to repeat the same sentence on every page. And the kids really caught on to that. We're like, well, we just said this did that or something. And they were like, no, we can't use that again. So how do we grab the reader's attention?
It's so interesting that you talk about that, Mandy, because when I was reading your article, I was thinking about the way Don Graves taught us to watch children and the part with the practice page where you're watching them, how they're stretching out words and how they're spelling. I think that just allows us to see how much work they're actually doing. And it helps us teach them right to the point of need. And you're exactly right. When we let them choose their own topics, they feel excited and they want to write. And we can teach all the standards within these things that kids are interested in. So thanks for that reminder.
Oh, you're most welcome. I had a little boy do a writer's notebook entry from home. And I asked them to open their fridge and list everything in their fridge. And the little boy started his video to me and he said, he shared his list from the fridge and he goes, I know you didn't ask, but here's my list of everything in my freezer. And I went, that was like choice, right? That was choice. I just burst out laughing. I was like, oh my God, this is the best video. He is a writer, and it's only been like 4 days of a writer's notebook. So, that choice motivates kids to keep going.
It sure does. And when they have that invitation and they know it's okay that they can make those choices, I just think we see some really fun topics come from children.
Mm-hmm. We do.
All right, Mandy. Well, it's great to talk to you. And I can't wait to hear more about what's happening in your classroom.
Thank you very much. It's been a joy to visit with you and everybody, the Choice Literacy readers today.
At Choice Literacy, we know that you want to be an educator who makes students' lives better through literacy. In order to do that, you need access to comprehensive literacy practices delivered in a way you will actually use. With over 150 in-the-field contributors, we understand the pressure to reach a variety of needs and not enough time to do it, which is why we hold true to workshop tenets like choice and share practical ways to plan and deliver literacy instruction straight to the point of student need. You can find links to all of the articles discussed in the show notes or sign up for the Big Fresh so you can have the links delivered directly to your inbox. Keep growing readers and writers by offering choice in literacy.